Okay, guys, for those of you who are here and haven't been here very often before, we're really, really pleased to see you. I hope everything that we talk about this morning is relatively clear and straightforward, that you can understand it. If there's anything that doesn't make sense, please come and say, because we are not in the business of not being able to understand what's going on. Now, we're doing platform 9 3/4. It's an occasional series. We've done three sessions on it, and we're talking about platform 9 3/4 because it's that place between here and there. It's the place that we know that somewhere exists. It's the place where your will is done on earth as it is in heaven. It's heaven now. It's when the veil is torn, if you want it in sort of old-fashioned Bible concepts. It's an alternative universe. And I was going to play the same video over again until I found on one of my favourite YouTube sites, which is called Improv Everywhere, they'd actually redone that sequence in Harry Potter. If you want to watch the rest of the film, you can look it up some other time. Okay, the whole of this series that we're doing has got three outcomes that we're looking for. We want to increasingly notice God, and when we notice God, we want to pay attention to him and then to respond to him. And wherever you are right now, I can guarantee that if you determine with all your heart that you want to be more acquainted with God, then it will happen. The key is, are you prepared to give up absolutely everything, every other priority, to go that way? And that's what counts. So, how are we going to do this? Well, last time we talked about noticing God, we talked about noticing God in the spectacular, when he does miracles. And we talked from Elijah. Remember, it's Elijah with a J, not Elisha with a shush, that we're talking about at the moment. And we talked about some of the amazing special events he saw in his life. And to be honest, you've got to be a real plonker if when God does something spectacular, you don't notice him. There are people who, when something really spectacular happens, try to find any other possible explanation but God for what happens. But most people, when something spectacular happens, notice God. The question for us is far more... Actually, I have got notes for this morning, and it would be a kindness to the rest of you if instead of trying to think of what I've got to say next, I should put them in front of me, wouldn't it? Recognising God in the ordinary stuff. The reason that we call miracles miracles is that whoever you are, whether your name is Billy Graham or John Wimber or Bill Johnson, it really doesn't matter. Statistically, miracles are miracles, and they're called miracles because they don't happen very often. I've seen a couple of miracles, which to me were miracles, but that happens pretty rarely. And for me, most of life is excruciatingly ordinary. And it's in the ordinary stuff that we really do need to notice God. Okay? We're really grateful for the spectacular stuff. But it's in the ordinary stuff that we notice God. And the problem for us is we talked about the fact that those experiences of God don't last very long, that they happen inside of us, and that they're difficult to describe. And so the problem for us is that they do happen inside. And you're possibly, when you've been talking to somebody who's asked you about why you follow Jesus, why you want to follow Jesus more closely in more areas of your life, you've found yourself saying to people, well, it's like this. And they've said, but that's just subjective, right? It's just inside here, okay? Well, I don't mind with people saying it's subjective. My problem is when they say it's just subjective, okay? Because otherwise you end up saying, oh, well, that's just objective, okay? Now, just imagine this, okay? Don't look at me like that, Wendy. I'm following the logical path here. Here's the path, right? I receive a card from Wendy that says, I love you, right? I look at it and I say, that's just objective, right? That's just an object, right? Or she does something for me and I say, that's just objective. And people do that sometimes, don't they? When couples are having a row, somebody will say, but look all that I've done for you. And you say, well, that doesn't count. It's what you feel that counts. You see, when somebody says, I love you, what is that other than subjective? And the biggest and the most important things in our lives are things that we experience subjectively, right, inside, not necessarily outside. Now, that's not illogical. It's not unreasonable. That's the way that life has lived. And so we're going to talk a bit about the kind of experiences that we have that are subjective. For instance, if you notice God or you feel God talking to you, it will be subjective. And right at the end, I want to tell you a story about somebody who just this week, we were here in talking, David and I were down in Southampton, and somebody was saying that they'd had some builders round at their house, they'd been working, one of them had got a real problem in their life, and they had a discussion and a talk, and the question came up, how do I know that I'm not just making it up, that it's not just happening inside my head? And that's where I want to get to this morning. That's where the push is. That's where we want to finish off. Now, where are we starting from? Here's the big thing. Jesus said, has God not said, I will never leave you, neither will I forsake you. That's what God says. If we believe that what God says is true, if we believe that what Jesus said is true, when he said, I am with you always, even to the end of the age, then the question isn't whether he's with us, but whether we notice him. Okay? So we can choose to say that God tells lies, or we can choose to say that we have a problem with our noticing. Okay? And that's what we're trying to do. We all have a problem with our noticing for all sorts of reasons. Partly because of the subjective thing, partly because we don't pay attention to God, and partly because we're learning to do things in a new way. Which is what takes us to Elijah. Now, the story we've told was up to here, and I really wanted to go on to about this bit. By the way, if you don't know what the story is, my drawings are startlingly clear for most people once I've explained them to them. But the first bit is about, the first thing we hear about Elijah is that God spoke to him and said that there was going to be no rain for 3 years. And indeed, there was no rain for 3 years. Elijah went off to God told him to go and sit by a stream, and that he commanded ravens to feed him there. Don't worry whether you can believe that stuff or not. That's only for idiots who have been on the road for a while who find that stuff easy to believe. But anyway, ravens came and they brought him bread and they brought him meat, and they had that. He had that experience for a while, but then the water dried up. Why God didn't keep the water running all the time, I don't know. But God wanted him to do something new. So he goes to a widow woman who's got a son, and she's picking up some sticks to make the very last fire, on which she cooks some flour with some oil, they'll make a cake, then they'll die. And he said to her, what are you doing? She said, I'm going to make this last meal for my son and myself. He said, being a very considerate kind of guy, don't worry about that. Make a cake for me and give me the food. And believe it or not, she did. And in so doing, the stuff never disappeared. The cake went on and on forever. Then the next thing that happens, it's almost as though Elijah was doing a training course. Because everything worked for a little while, and then it stopped working. And then he had to go over it again and revise it. I don't know whether anybody here ever feels that their life is like that. You know, you feel you've cracked something and you think, this really works for me, and it's really happening, and then suddenly it stops. And you have to learn the lesson again. And then it works for a while, you have to learn the lesson again. Some of you are nodding, some of you are looking completely blank as I'm talking heresy. But hey, that's the way it seems to work. Because the next thing that happened is, after her son and herself had survived, her son dies. Okay? And she does her nut at Elijah. Elijah comes along and prays, and her son comes back to life again. Then there's a big famous story which takes up... There's only three chapters on Elijah, and one of them is devoted to what happened when he had a showdown with the prophets of Baal. Prophets of Baal were really wild kind of guys. There were 450 of them, and there was Elijah over here. And Elijah did something I could never imagine daring to do. And I can't imagine any of the big evangelist kind of guys doing either. He said, right, he said, what we'll do is we'll each set up a fire, an altar. You'll have one ox on there, and I'll have an ox here. We won't get any matches or anything. We will just pray to our gods, and we'll see what happens. And sure enough, it didn't work for the prophets of Baal, and for Elijah, the whole thing burst into flames. Right, some people say, oh, well, we know how that happened. It was late in the day, and it was spontaneous combustion. That makes the assumption that all the chroniclers, all the people who told the story, were idiots then, that they'd never thought of that possibility. And in fact, Elijah knew there were people around like that, so he got barrels and barrels of water and chucked it over the ox before he even prayed. Anyway, this is spectacular. Do you know, I think if something happened like that for me, and we're all looking for something really marvellous and miraculous like that, I would be cool for the rest of my life. I would have no problems if somebody said to me anything that sort of queried my faith or queried about God, I would say to them, you don't know anything. I saw God come from heaven with fire and it all worked. But, you know, just after this, Elijah had another good episode. But I want to tell you about Elijah's breakdown this morning. And it's this bit, but we need to go into this in somewhat more detail as we're thinking about this. And it sort of happened like this. Okay, so, stand by for my excellent drawings. It all started off with some woman. Lots of trouble in life starts off with women, but that's an issue. Right. In fact, this woman has given a name to every bad woman that's ever existed since then. Named Jezebel. Right. Here she is. Long hair. Bit tatty, but, you know. And she was really wild. Bad, bad, bad lady. Good picture. Everybody understands what it means. And she said to Elijah, I am going to kill you. I'm going to make sure that you die. And interestingly, he got away with predicting the stuff. He got away with the thing with the Baal worshippers, and she was into the Baal thing. And suddenly... She, it just sort of pushes her over the edge. Now, when you read about Elijah, there's at least a couple of instances where you hear about him running. Okay, people did a lot of walking, did a lot of running in those days, moved around from place to place. I was watching a program about Bach during the week, sad person that I am, and they were saying there that when he moved from place to place, he walked. He and his friend walked 260 miles to go and meet another organist, Bach, Johann Sebastian of that ilk. Yeah, they would walk because you didn't have very many options. And Elijah runs, right, because he's scared. He runs, right, there he goes as he's running. You don't need the rest of him. There's some smoke coming here. Very, very big calf muscles. Sort of very tough kind of guy. Sort of done lots of running. He runs and he runs and he runs because he's scared. He's scared of Jezebel. This is the guy who's stood up to 450 prophets of Baal. He comes to the desert, right, and finds a bush in the desert, lays down and falls asleep. Okay, that's what happens. He wants to die. He's fed up. I don't want to live, is what he says. Lots of people say that from time to time. Some of us say it and don't mean it. Some of us do mean it. And that's really bad when that happens. And what happens at that particular point is an angel comes along, right? Angel's sort of big and scary, not like a Barbie doll at all. Angel comes along and has a bottle of water, right, and some bread. Gives him the bottle and bread. And says, have a drink, have something to eat. This is what you need. Really interesting. The angel doesn't come along and say to him, sort yourself out. Or here's an encouragement. Or read this bit out of the Bible. Or listen to this CD. He says, have something to eat, have something to drink. And he goes back to sleep. So then the same thing happens again. Right? The angel comes again. And does the whole process again and says, eat, because the journey's too much for you. And so in this process of breakdown, complete emotional collapse, he gets this stuff going and sets off again on a journey. Now, I meant to get this all on one page, but never mind. The story's too long for that. He actually goes, the Bible says, for 40 days. Okay, so a whole calendar full of days here. It was in the month of May. I happen to know that because it's the shortest month to write at the top. And so he runs for a month. And then after travelling for a month, he gets to the mountain of God called Horeb. And he gets into a cave. Now, those of you, I've never had depression. But I have been fed up. But I understand from people who have had depression that it just doesn't go away. You know, sort of it doesn't go away quickly. It only goes away when it goes away. But there he is. He's still fed up in a cave. And God comes to him and says to him, now this is how far he'd got down the road of noticing God. God could come to him under that circumstance. He could see angels. He could do all sorts of things. But he's still really, really fed up. And what happens is that when God comes and says, what are you doing there? And he says, I've really worked hard for you, God, and you have let me down. That's what he says. And do you know, God doesn't start dealing with the thing. He says to him, go and stand on the mountain. And so, here we are. He's standing on the mountain. Elijah, standing on the mountain. Miserable expression on his face, because God's let him down. And the first thing that happens is that there's a massive wind. Right? I won't say if you can do it better, come and do it, because I know you could, but you'd take longer and you'd be fussing around for ages, and we've got to get through this. So, first of all, there's a wind, right? Massive, massive wind. And then there's an earthquake. Can't spell earthquake, that will do. And then there's a fire. Okay? And all those things happen. And God doesn't speak in those. Now, all the way through Elijah's life, God has spoken to him in these amazing ways. God has shown his presence in amazing ways. But do you know, apparently, I am told, that what it says, well, what do we think it says? What do our translations say that it says? It wasn't in the earthquake, it wasn't in the wind, it was in the fire, but it was in... still small voice is the way. But do you know, apparently, an equally good way of translating that would be the sound of sheer silence. Right? That's how low level it was. And just for Joe and Heidi and people like me, this will actually possibly cement that in your minds. Some of you got no idea what this is. You're not going to pray. It's the sound of silence. The interesting thing about this is that when Wendy and I did our first missional training, it was for a month, and we were Campus Crusade for Christ. And the basis of one of the lectures we had was this song, and it was about existentialism. And the guy played it through once, because it came out in 1964 when I was terribly young. Really young. It was sort of contemporaneous before Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and things like that. But the guy played this through, and then, of course, immediately you left the lecture room afterwards. All the students who were our age, sort of 18, 19, got the record out and started playing it again and again. And he came into the room and he said, "No," he said, "that is not why we're doing it. You should not be playing this song. This is a very, very bad song indeed," because he was using it to illustrate existentialism. But there is something about the sound of silence.
Excuse me, what is existentialism?
Existentialism. Okay. It's a view that just what is exists, and the only way you know it is because you make it exist in your mind. So, you know, this chair is here because I say it's here. And was big, you know, sort of was connected with the LSD thing and all sort of around that time. But it seems odd, doesn't it, when we talk about noticing God, God speaking to us, the fact that it's a sound of silence that comes through. But I don't know whether you've actually ever experienced something like that. I can remember when I was a student, it was, and I was revising for my exams, and Simon and Garfunkel comes into this as well, because the Bridge Over Troubled Water had just come out, and the girls next door to me kept on playing it and playing it and playing it and playing it when I was revising urban industrial sociology. And I can never think of Bridge Over Troubled Water without thinking and panicking about my exams. But there was one particular evening when I was reading the Bible, and I got to a place and suddenly something happened. And I felt different. I felt as though something had happened inside of me. I felt as though I understood something. And I've never been able to preach on that piece of the Bible because I just can't explain. And almost all of you will have had some experience like that, that you can't explain but you know was God. And it's something that makes you desperately hungry inside because you want it to happen again and want it to happen all the time. So, here we are. The sound of silence in ordinary days. Why don't you talk to one another just for a minute or two about where you've noticed God recently? Where have you noticed God? And just try and monitor what you're talking about to see how difficult it is to explain where you've noticed God, and how unconvincing it seems when you talk to somebody else about it. Where have you noticed God recently? Okay, just Just have a little think about this. Were any of these things that were observable and external? Yeah? I'm not going to pick up the detail because you remember a couple of weeks ago I talked about meeting up with Nathan. What were we doing, Nathan? But, you know, oh yeah, that was when Andy had forgotten that you said that you were to be at the Bridge Centre, and then on Saturday as well we connected. And the point is, that was really objective. It was very significant. It was actually, it's still arguing. The pair of them are still arguing about who was right over that. I know. But any road. But for those of us who are involved, that was objective. But you remember, I complained because when I told you the story, nobody was excited about it as we were. Yeah? Because you weren't there when it happened. And even with objective stuff, it doesn't always make the impact. That's why when God does a marvellous, marvellous healing, people hear about it, shrug their shoulders and walk away. Because it doesn't connect. But for lots of us, those things will have been subjective. Okay? Either because we have a look at circumstances and something happens and we say, I think God did that, I think God made that happen. Or because it's something that happens inside us. And of course, we've got this daft way, it's sort of mechanistic way of operating, sort of, we operate like, think we're like machines, that we think that the big things are the ones that happen outside, but the ones that keep us going are very often the ones that happen to us inside, the ones that we feel. And most, even of the big prophets, got their main stuff through what happened inside. Daniel. Right, you think of Daniel, and he was the big dreamer, the big vision person. Daniel had a dream, and visions passed through his mind. Daniel 7:1, Daniel 7:15 says the same thing. In Daniel 10:7, where Daniel sees the angel, do you remember the meed about the big spiritual warfare scene? It says that angel. Try putting the sentence words right order in. Daniel saw the angel, but all the others who were with him didn't. So this magnificent event that gets written up in the Bible and is used as almost the only proof text for the kind of spiritual warfare that people like us sometimes think is the way to do things, is just actually based on something that only one person saw. Only happened in one person's mind. And part of our noticing God and attending to God helps. We're helped in that when we actually start to accept the fact that God does things in our minds. You remember that we said about at the beginning that love is something that exists inside of us but is real. Fear, I think, is just as real as love. It's interesting that the Bible says that perfect love throws fear outdoors. It makes fear an orphan, is the image that it uses. So, how does that work for us? Let's establish the facts, first of all. Let's just go through the facts. Now, before we do that, I've got another question. I want to tell you this story. See Sandberg there? Okay, he's in a meeting. Sort of typical pose. Hands in his pockets, praying, worshipping. And over here on the far right-hand side is called a guy called Billy Kennedy, who leads the Pioneer Network, which are about 80-100 churches of which we're part. And the person I want to tell you about is the woman with long hair there. She's called Nikki, and she goes to the same church as Joel and Jenny Marsh do, Andy and Philippa's daughter. And she was the woman who was saying to us that she had had some builders in her house, and she chatted to them, and one of them was saying that he and his wife were really struggling to become pregnant, and they didn't know what to do, and they were really upset about it. And she said, as you do, well, why don't you talk to God about it? Okay? That was the conversation about noticing God. Why don't you talk to God about it? And so the guy went off, and he came back the next day, and she said to him, well, what happened? Oh no, actually, I think he opened the subject, didn't he? Anyway, it doesn't. We didn't actually interview her on the detail, but she said that what happened was he came back and said to her there were two words that he got, and I can't remember both of them, so I won't tell you either of them because it doesn't make sense really. But she said, and she said to him, "Well, what about that?" And he said to her, "How do I know I'm not making it up?" Okay? Have you ever had anybody say that to you? I've had it said a few times. Okay, here's the question. Discuss with one another. What do you think she said? Or even better, what would you have said to somebody who said, "How do I know I'm not making it up?" Duh. Real life question, guys. How do I know I'm not making it up? Okay. What would you have said? What would you have said?
Give it a go.
Give it a go. Actually, it's almost what she said. We'll come back to that. I should not have asked you. Take us right to there. What else would you?
Ask me again in 9 months' time.
Ask me again in 9 months' time. Yeah, you know when you're pregnant. The problem is, it's according to your faith be it unto you, isn't it? And if you're sceptical, then you're stuffed before you start. It's not going to work under those circumstances. Anything else? How does it make you feel? Yeah.
It's something that you haven't thought of before. It's a new thought.
Yeah. One of the things she actually said to this guy, I'm not sure whether the first time or the second time, but it was write down the first thing that comes into your mind. Yeah? And sometimes our second reactions are not very helpful. Sometimes we have daft initial thoughts, but, you know, sort of, you get it the other way around too. What she said was, well, why don't you go back and ask again? And he went back and came back the following day and said, what happened this time? He said, well, the voice said, it came to me, I am your father. And for this guy, it just sort of all made sense. And I think we're going to do that a lot more. And I'm going to take a real risk here, because I know I'm going to embarrass a couple of people, but I've just got to tell you a story that I've been busting to tell you all morning, because it's just so important. Not so long ago, Katrina came to me and said, I want you to talk to a friend of mine. And I'd already met Carol, and I am going to be quite brief, and I'm not going to do very much detail, but I am just so excited about this. You guys made my week last week. So what happened is that in the end, not thanks to UltraWarm, but we got there and we sat down and talked, Carol and Katrina and I. And as we talked about some difficult stuff and some good stuff. And I had the wonderful opportunity of saying to Carol, would you like Jesus to be at the centre of your life? Would you like to start following him? And she said yes. And we prayed. And so we've got the opportunity of welcoming somebody to a family on a journey who first got in contact with Dayspring through Katrina. And do you come along to Cabaret first? Yeah, to Cabaret and to Cafe. And she's had Katrina going on at her for months. And yeah, and I have the delightful opportunity just to be included in Katrina's process of introducing her friend to Jesus. And so we find ourselves as a stage on a pathway coming along here, and there's Katrina on one side and me on the other, and we hold out a hand to Carol, hold her hand, and we reach out her hand to Jesus, and hold his and say, "Hello, Carol, this is Jesus. Hello, Jesus, this is Carol." And they join hands. That's all we can do. But that's our business. And you know, we went on from there, and we actually, we did this thing, because what I didn't tell you, Carol, at the time, was this story about Nikki was going through my head. And I was thinking, I'm going to try this. And I said to Carol, "Now we're going to sit quietly, ask the Holy Spirit to come and see what he says to you." And we sat quietly, and then I'm as scared as can be that it doesn't show, probably under those circumstances, mainly because Katrina was praying like fury, and got a little cross there as well, and all that stuff. And I said to Carol, what was it that was said to you? And she said, "Nothing." Like, my heart. But, she said, it was different to that, because I felt. And then she said what she felt. And it was just excellent. And, you know, if Katrina and Carol's journey goes on the way it is at the moment, where they get opportunity to turn to God and say, "I want to attend to you, what do you want me to know?" It's going to be a brilliant journey. It's not going to be all ups. Hope it's not too much like Elijah's, which has spectacular things happening and then a nervous breakdown in the middle, where you run for 40 days. At least you'll be fit, even if you're a mess at the end. that's just great. You know, it's what makes life worth living. And so, while we're talking about this, I'm trying to make it work and think about it at every level. For somebody who's been trying to follow Jesus since they were 4 and is now 64, how does this work? For somebody who's been on the way for a little while, for somebody who's just starting out on a journey that's going to have bumps and difficulties on the way, how's it going to happen that we notice God in the ordinary? And my big picture in mind this week, I've got to pick on somebody else. Annabelle is off to Germany this week. 24-hour trip to Germany starting at 9-hour trip to Germany, starting at 10:30 at night, going to Aachen and then coming back all on a coach. You must have done something terribly wrong, people, to make you do that. But wouldn't it be great if during that time she's actually able to just take a little bit of time attending to God and notice his God with her? Because when you do these big trips, when you go away from home, when you're doing something different, those things are strange and they are difficult. What about the stuff that you've got to face this week? You know, I think of Julie with her husband who either seems to be terribly ill or racing around the countryside buying new tyres. And all the other circumstances that you guys face that make some of us seem to have a really easy life. And I wonder whether it might just be a good idea for us to spend a moment or two at the start of the week just seeing whether he, Father, Son and Spirit, and you could say she as well, I wouldn't mind that. There I go. I've gone and scored heresy again. But you see, God's bigger than us and bigger than the ways that we categorise things. But wouldn't it be great just to see whether there's anything he wants to say to you or wants to make you feel? Let's just be before him for a moment or two. If you want to look, as I'm praying, I'm going to be sequencing some of the other places in the Bible where it says, "I will never leave you, neither will I forsake you." But hang on to this for a minute. Just 12 o'clock, so we've got 3 or 4 minutes. If other stuff pushes its way in, and it sure will, then just push it to one side and say, "I'm not thinking about that at the moment." But here we come. Father, we come to you and we would like to know your closeness. We would like to notice you deep inside us. We would like to respond to the way that you care for us. Jesus, Son of God, Big Brother, one who looks after us and stands up for us. Come and tell us what we need to know. Holy Spirit, come and help us feel what you're feeling, what we need. Just in the silence. Be aware. God speaking to you. Be aware of his presence. While you're still quiet, just bear this in mind that what we said was that the person who comes to me must believe the person who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he rewards those who diligently keep on seeking him. And whether that worked for you right now or whether it didn't, there's a possibility of keeping on keeping on. How long for? Don't know. Some people keep on a long time before they begin to hear God's voice and know God's presence. But why don't you make a promise to yourself that this week, at some point, at least once, you will endeavour to sit quietly, right? Sit quietly, don't lay quietly, because you'll probably fall asleep if you do that, but sit quietly and just take opportunity to notice God. Not outside, but inside, in your heart. Amen. It's great. Hope you made sense of that. It made sense to me. It's just getting it out. It doesn't come out in the same way always as it starts. Next week, I'll come back to you, Adrian, but Andy and Marion are speaking, that's part of the Missional Essentials series. The week after that, we're back again on Noticing God, where I want to go up the mountain again, but a different one with Elijah. And then on the 15th and 22nd, we've got our two Christmas events.